were saying a while back about some teachers in high school that had an influence on you. I wonder if you'd expound upon that for a few moments.
Well, I said the Latin teacher had an influence on me. Not, I don't think academically, the standards were very high, and my crush on her is something that I can't quite explain, because she was the most frustrated individual. I think I subconsciously sensed her longing for affection. But there was a history teacher, a prim little New England lady who was tremendously stimulating, with whom I corresponded until she died, who really gave us a vision of history other than facts and dates, really interpretive. Probably would not be regarded as very progressive today, but she really fired my imagination. Her standards were tremendously high, but she steered us to a lot of things that just opened up doors to us. And then there was an English teacher who really opened the doors on literature for us. Some people didn't like her. She was too sarcastic, but she was tremendously stimulating. But those two people really stood out.
And now, in your Vassar days, will you describe Vassar to us at the time you went? You went in what year to Vassar?
1920.
And what was it like then? Was it multicultural, multi-religious?
Well, it was multi-religious, but not in the sense it is now. Maybe 5% of the students were Jewish. There were no blacks. And not for a long time after that. There was a wide geographic a distribution, a substantial group of foreign students. Close friends from Czechoslovakia, Latvia. After the First World War, President Parkin had been very influential in international education circles and brought students from all over the world. So we had a magnificent experience that way. But otherwise, certainly we had a broad base from the United States, a very substantial scholarship students, substantial numbers of people from varied backgrounds. I think I, with one thing or another, had a pretty broad base, nothing like what you'd have today, and of course it was all women. And social regulations were strict compared to today. And you had your permission to take your father up to your room.
Yeah.
And you theoretically had a chaperone if you had a young man in your room. You had to have a permit to get a man on campus at the weekend.
Wow.
It wasn't hard to get. I mean,
yeah,
you had to ask for it.
Right.
But it was great concession. One of my friends became engaged to during her junior year that the head resident, or they call it a warden, which perhaps reflects something too, would let her go up to the room and not be fixed.
Now, at Vassar, did all the extracurricular life that you had revolve around campus activities, or did you make use of the town?
No, we made no use of the town. A few people did. There was a settlement there, which some people worked, I didn't. I only made use of the town on a research project, and that was just doing statistics.
On what?
This was a course in statistics, I should say. And I did a paper on the turnover of retail grocers in the city of Poughkeepsie over a period, and that just meant going to the business guide for the city of Poughkeepsie and working down in the library. And years later, I went back to the union and found the chart I did up on the wall.
so that the academic life and the social life and the cultural life all revolved on the Vassar campus because they brought things to the campus?
They brought things to the campus. Oh, I remember going downtown to hear Paderewski speak at some rally. I mean, spoke as the in his capacity as Polish president, and an occasional political rally, but I didn't very much involved, you see.
You mentioned earlier about an incident at the end of your freshman year that had to do with rooms that could have had some anti-Semitic overtones. Were you ever aware of overt anti-Semitism among the talk of the girls during your years?
No.
There?
It was a fundamental social snobbishness among certain groups, rather, which we just weren't. And I remember was aware of it, I think, also at the time of junior prom, that I didn't succeed in exchanging dances, it was a dance card days, mm-hmm. with people with whom I would have liked to.
And that probably was true of the other Jewish girls also? Were there?
No, it was, I don't remember.
The other Jewish girls that came to Vassar in those days, did they come mainly from the New York area, or were they representative of other parts of the United States?
Well, no, they were representative of other parts of the United States. Our intimate group consisted of five, and two were from New York, one was from St. Louis, and one was from Boise, Idaho.
Today, on university campuses, there are various Jewish organizations. Were there any on the Vassar campus?
No.
None at all. So if the Jewish girls got together, it was completely on their own.
It was completely on their own. No organizations. There was no...
Any religious activities that would go on? Any
no
services?
Jewish religious activities. I remember once being identified by being asked whether I had a member of the religious department, whether I would care to teach a Jewish Sunday school. And of course, I had no background.
Did you decline?
I declined because I didn't know anything about it, but they were recruiting. And I once went to Temple in Poughkeepsie because my couple of someone was signed up to talk for a child labor amendment. My sister had been assigned to the temple in Poughkeepsie, so we went down. That was my first attendance at the formal Jewish worship.
Ah, your sister followed you to Vassar also?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And were you close when she then came to Vassar, or is it because she was 2 years behind you, you weren't?
Well, we saw a good deal of each other,
huh.
Yes.
Would you comment on the quality of the academic life at Vassar, and also maybe comment on how you feel about some things that might have happened there that maybe influenced your life as you live it?
Well, I think the quality of the academic life was superb. And I think certainly the mental discipline I got has been with me all. Has been with me all my life. I think it's just as important today. The ability, if I have it, to sort out simple facts from detail, to see more than one side of an issue, to see qualifications. And perhaps the thing more than anything else was strongly stressed there, always to evaluate your sources, to see opinions, facts, in the light of the background of the person who presents them. That, of course, has been paramount in recent years, you know, public hearing. And why are these people talking the way they are? This was a viewpoint, an attitude that was drilled into me.
In many of the courses at Vassar?
Yes, it was absolutely central. your sources, your original sources, the to sort out principle from the day. That was very much part of my, well, it was buttressed by my home discussions and things like that, because it was constantly found.
In other words, that's the way your parents reasoned also. So
yes,
that was reasonable.
I think so. Mm-hmm. My father had a similar kind of discipline. Mm-hmm. And certainly some of my work in economics, statistics, resulted in my not being afraid of that side of life. And I think the incentive and the the sense of social responsibility was also very much a part of the atmosphere then.
At Vassar?
Yes.
Ah.
It came very much to the top, the sense of an obligation to your community, responsibility for the kind of a world in which you lived. After all, this was right after the First World War, when there was a growing concern. And I think the other thing that which we came out of it too was I always tell people I belong to the first generation of women's lib. We were not going to, when we were first breaking into new careers. And I certainly was not going to teach, my mother taught. And I was going to do different things and newer things. And it wasn't, it took different forms when it took to that. But we certainly were perfectly sure we were not going to lead our lives. We had no, I don't think we had aversion to marriage. We weren't going to get married until we found exactly the right person. And we were not going to let ourselves be, get into a rut of housekeeping and children. We were going to see that we did something on the outside. It's very much part of our thinking.
Would you say that this attitude was developed by the young women that you were with, or would you say it was developed because of what you heard academically at Vassar?
It was the climate of the times. It was the, you heard it from the faculty, you heard it from the students. It was the temper of the times.
I wonder if before we leave your very young years, we could talk for a moment about health and medical care. What we're interested in is the services that were available during your childhood and your early youth in New York City, and about the relative health of you and your family.
My situation is perhaps not entirely typical, because my father's brother was a physician, and he was our family doctor.
He lived close by.
He lived close by. And so that when we were ill, he came to see us. And when he once wanted a consultation, because I was supposedly a puny child, which is hard to believe, and he took us to a pediatrician, who, it was a frightening experience.
Why?
Man's personality, I suspect. And I think it created a certain nervousness on my part that lasted for years about going to a doctor, because this was such a terrifying experience, because all the rest of it was so terribly casual. Because we knew sooner or later Uncle Carl would show up, but he was always the last one. But he was a top flight internist, that is, with the standards of his time.
Were you ever hospitalized during your growing up years?
Yes, I had an appendectomy when I was 16.
other than that, that was your whole hospital experience?
That was my whole hospital experience until I had children.
How about your parents? How was their health?
Their health was good. Fundamentally, I remember sinus trouble and neuritis, but basically it was...
Nothing major.
No.
Now, during the epidemics that were sweeping across America, was your family or any of your immediate relatives hit by this?
Well, the 1982 epidemic, my father had pneumonia, my brother died.
And it was from that epidemic that your brother died?
It was from that epidemic, yes.
Did they hospitalize in those days for the flu epidemic?
No. Father's pneumonia was treated at home. Mother had all her children at home. I think she had a therapeutic abortion once and had it at home. I remember the episode. It was years and years before I knew what it was. I just knew she'd been in bed.
Yes. You were a young child at the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well.
Therefore, all the health care that you and your family needed was very readily available and top quality.
Yes, I mean, if you needed a nurse, you could get a trained nurse in your home.
Now could we talk about the health care at Vassar? Did you need a physical examination upon entrance, and was there a medical office available
to the girls?
There was a
medical office. And there was an infirmary, and there was... we had a physical, and we had a...
And did you ever need the medical office for anything out of the ordinary?
I went there for a cold once. I should have gone sooner. I took care of myself because junior prom was coming up and I didn't want to miss it. I was half sick that night.
Okay, you've talked during this last hour, you've touched on some of the fun and recreation that you've had in growing up. You talked about your Sunday mornings and you talked about your summers. I wonder if you would expand on each of those for a few minutes for us. I'd like to know names of places where you went on those Sunday mornings, if you can remember them, and a little bit more about your activities in the Adirondacks.
Well, we certainly, it wasn't only Sunday mornings and Saturdays, too, going to New York afterwards. We certainly went to the museums, Special Natural History, Metropolitan. Walk on Riverside Drive, walk in Central Park, walk up and down Broadway. I remember walking up and down Broadway with Father Sunday morning, going for a walk and deciding, everybody making a guess at how many people we'd meet that we knew. Well, that's what everybody did on Sunday mornings, you know, the friends you met and acquaintances. And we went and taken the circus. Not every year, every other year, I think, when it came. It was for us to expect it every year.
Do you remember whose circus it was?
Quite a bit.
And where was that circus performance held?
Madison Square Garden. Remember going to the Hippodrome, the old Hippodrome ones, or something, and it was a theater across the street from us where plays came. Like what the setup was after they'd been off Broadway. Things occasionally played there. It was supposedly a movie theater, but sometimes at times there was theater, and we went there. This was in the high school days, of course.
And this was across the street from where your home was in Manhattan.
Yes, mm-hmm. This was something that lasted for a while, and I've forgotten what the setup was. It was after they'd had a Broadway run, or whether it was traveling companies that did it, but I remember that going occasionally after school.
Do you remember the address of where you lived in those days?
Yes, I lived 269 West 90th Street.
West 90th.
269 West 90th, was between Broadway and West End. And we lived there from 1910. All the folks lived there until 1939, I think.
So really, all your growing up years were in that one spot.
Yes, I grew up. We lived in an apartment the first 6 years, and I remember a few things vaguely about that.
so that your fun and your recreation really centered around the main part of Manhattan.
Yes, we had occasional expeditions to the country. We had a few friends who worked in the suburbs. We'd go out there for a Sunday.
How would you get there?
Ferry. And usually the ferry and the streetcar. And then I think a few of our friends had cars, and occasionally we'd be taken in a car.
Would just the family go, or would the governess go along also?
I don't know. No, I think those things, I don't know. No, when we did those things, it was alone.
Huh.
And we'd go up to the Bronx Zoo. I remember an expedition to Staten Island. We found pictures not long ago, an expedition to Staten Island. A spring vacation, Mother always devoted to us, and we did something different every single day.
Oh.
I remember going to Franco-American Soup Factory once, and going through one of the big ocean liners that was tied up. And there was almost the museum. Big treat, and once in a long while, to go down to Dad's office.
Where was his office located?
Down the walls in the financial district. I remember going down there and as a very small child, when they celebrated the Henrik Hudson tercentenary, and they had a model of a half moon in the river. Coming down to his office to be shown that. That was the kind of thing that we did.
So the full use was made of the surroundings in New York City.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Do you remember, did any of your household help have any influence or make any impression upon you in your growing years?
I was aware of them. I don't think they had any influence. Oh, I suppose some of them, a couple of German governesses, with their ultra-rigidity, which Mother was always trying to modify.
You didn't ever have any French-speaking help?
No.
They were German?
Well, we had a couple of, we had a Swiss once or twice, but the French wasn't hot. It wasn't so hot.
Uh-huh. Now I wonder if you'd tell me about the Adirondacks. How did your parents get there, and why did they choose it, and why did they keep returning?
Well, we just loved it. My father had gone there in his youth, and we started about 1909. Why they started, I don't know. We had tried for some years near New York, gone out on Long Island, Far Rockaway, something like that, and not been overly satisfactory. I suppose they did that originally so father could commute daily. Then we went up the Adirondacks, and he used to come up every single weekend.
Now, how did you get to the Adirondacks?
By train. It was the great adventure of the year, the sleeper to the Adirondacks.
And what was the exact location where you went?
We went to Lake Placid. Well, we rented a house. One house for 2 years, and then another one we had over a long-term lease. Father would never buy because he couldn't get the water rights to the place. Used a boathouse that belonged to some neighbors, but he never wanted to buy it because it was afraid he couldn't sell it.
How long did it take to get from New York City up to Lake Placid?
Overnight.
It was an overnight trip.
An overnight trip. Great adventure.
Do you remember going there as a very young child?
Well, we first went when I was. We first started going there when my brother was born in 1907.
Uh-huh.
We went in 1910. Was the first, no, 1911 was the first. And we went up there the day after school closed and stayed all summer. Father used to come up every weekend and then spent the month of August.
And would you see the same people coming up every summer?
Yes, there were, well, I suppose there were some changes, but fundamentally there was a group of people who went there year after.
Would you describe for us a typical day, a typical summer day for you and your sister up in the Adirondacks?
Well, of course, they changed as we got older, but we played outdoors. We picked berries, we went for walks, we picked wildflowers. We gathered wildflowers every Friday to have the house full when Dad came Saturday mornings. And as we got to our second place, which was all overgrown with raspberries, we would go out and pick raspberries in great quantities for Mother to make jelly. And every Saturday we were supposed to go out and right on the place and pick them so we could have homemade raspberry ice cream on Sundays. And of course, it was, I think of it every once in a while, it was pre-blue jeans days. So we brought into the laundry and our clothes were scooped off of us and boiling water poured over them because they were full of raspberry stains. I still itch when I get near a raspberry patch. Just in recollection.
Did you ever?
Yep. We played games. There was quite a group. And there was a colony of families that had the joint and recreation facilities very near our place. And it seems to me we played croquet endlessly. We played some tennis. We would play outdoors in the morning, then we'd swim at noon. Maybe in the afternoon there'd be an expedition somewhere to somebody's house to play or to go for one of the shorter walks. Then weekends and Sundays we'd go off on occasionally on a bigger expedition. It got bigger as we got older when we were very small. I remember fathers taking us on exploring hikes. And I am perfectly sure now as I look back of it, he probably saw the trail all the time. But he taught us how to take care of ourselves in the wilderness. And taught us something I still do is if you have to put yourself up somewhere, always grab a live branch, not a dead one. A live one, no matter how small, will hold you. And that comes back to me every time I'm out in the woods. And how would you find your way if you were really lost? As I say, I'm sure he was as far as this from the trail, but we thought we were out in the wilderness. And go and see the polywogs, turn into frogs, and learn to identify flowers. Mother was an ardent flower lover and knew all our flowers.
What did your parents do for recreation? Were they always with the children?
Oh, no, they played tennis. And not with the children. And they, when we went swimming together, we used to go out on the lake together, and they would, they had quite a bit of social life there. One of our friends had a very good voice, and periodically they would gather a group to, and she would sing. The evening I remember sitting out, it was an adult party we weren't in, but I remember sitting out on the steps to listen. And they would go off, frequently on days. In fact, one of the things that still sticks with me from childhood is every once in a while they'd go off on a day's hike in the mountains somewhere. And I can still remember the glow with which they came in from it. Of course, that kind of thing's been very much a part of our lives.
How did you learn swimming and tennis?
My father taught me.
When you were up at the Adirondacks, did you ever help with the cooking?
Once in a long while I did something. I recall making some cupcakes once on a recipe I'd learned at school. Not to help with the cooking. I think it was more of a nuisance than a help. And I had this bachelor uncle who was a musician. He used to go to Europe, and after the First World War, he spent his summers with us, and there was a typical Adirondack tent, a canvas tent on a platform, a raised platform. He had his piano up there, and he worked there all summer. And this thing had a bathroom attached to it, believe it or not. This is something rather unique. And I remember his coming in, he used to come in mealtimes, come in through the kitchen. And he picked up, he knew I made some cupcakes. And he picked up the cupcake and dropped it on the table, and it was the most awful thud. He brought a rock in his pocket and dropped it on the floor.
Was it this uncle that helped influence your love for music?
I think it was more the whole atmosphere. His, I'm not sure that he influenced my life in music because he tried teaching me in the summertime. It was a disaster.
Did he want to teach you piano?
Well, yes. Supposedly, I kept up my practicing, and he was up there composing, and he'd forget to give me a lesson. I had an outside teacher, me at Selected's in New York, and he was, he'd forget, give me a lesson, in about 3 weeks he'd come out from his composing and give me a lesson. By that time I had a mistake so well practiced, and when he corrected it, I'd do it over again, and the sour note would offend his musical ear, and he'd start to yell at me, and then he'd come down to Mother later in the day, terribly upset that he had yelled at me because he adored us. Generally, it was not very successful.
How young were you when you started your piano instruction?
Too young, probably. Maybe younger. Wait a minute. Probably 9 to 10. We didn't have a piano for a year. Probably 8 or 9, something like that.
And you studied privately for how long?
Till I went to college. Then I took lessons. Went to college. And of course I was to take piano lessons. And I didn't have any discovered in a great hurry that there were other things that were much more interesting to me than my piano. I wanted to spend the time in the library. So I came home Thanksgiving and suggested I stop. And when I, the idea of Goldmark not taking piano lessons was just, by December, Christmas time, they changed their minds, decided I was right, and that I would get more out of the library than I would out of practicing every day. There was a funny little old lady who taught, and some of my teacher's pupils were coming up the next year, and I didn't want her to judge them by me, so I said to her, I had a very good teacher. She said, you must have to have gotten you as far as she did. At that point, I knew I was right
back
in quitting.
Once you stopped your lessons at Vassar, did you ever return to the piano just on your own?
Only to play the accompaniments to the Hanukkah and Passover hymns, and I turned those over to anybody else if I had a chance.
So your interest in music then, from then on,
I wished I had, I thought about it occasionally, going back and taking lessons. I've got very definite ideas about it. Music instruction for children.
What are they? I wish you'd share those ideas with us.
Well, I think there is a great lack even today of piano teaching for the person who is not going to be a skilled pianist. That scales and metronomes and all those things are fine if you... But for the person who wants music as literature, music as a cultural thing, to be able to play for enjoyment, you need a certain skill, but it's the discipline that should, there's a point at which that should relax, and there should be some teaching for enjoyment. I tried it with one of my children, and the teacher didn't quite get it either.
Is there anyone around that you think does?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've been out of touch with that for too long now. But there should be a way of getting people who... All right, you're not going to get very far. Yes, one teacher did. I think Franny got a certain amount of it. Ellie quit very early. Ellie was too much about the pictures to listen to her own piano playing. But there's a point at which you ought to be able to say, all right, I'm going to teach you to read music. I'm going to teach you enough that you can sit down with a symphony score and pick out the the themes, and you're never going to be able to play for anybody else's pleasure, but so what, you play for your own. And I don't think that has ever been really adequately developed.
Okay. Before we start...
Not too much.